This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yi Swoo Heap coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
We have fully prepared, and we have been preparing for the past 6 years in the process. We've gone through a lot of training, a lot of capacity building. We have seized the opportunity with the challenges we have.
That's Liberia's defense minister telling VOA the army is ready to take over defense of the country from a UN military mission. Details coming up.
Also, the new U.S. envoy to Somalia, Stephen Schwartz, has been sworn into office, and the next president to ask his country to change its constitution so he can keep power may be Joseph Kabila of the DRC.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Cameroon says it is deploying more troops to its far northern border with Nigeria after a suicide attack late yesterday killed at least 13 people in the border town of Lamani. Moki Edwin Kinzaka reports from Yaoundé.
Midji Yawa Bakari, governor of the far north region of Cameroon, says the two teenage suicide bombers crossed the border from Nigeria's Borno state late Wednesday. One detonated his explosives at a popular spot where youth had gathered to watch films, while the other went to a local mosque. The governor said officials believe the bomber may have intended to hide there and attack the faithful who attend morning Ramadan prayers in large numbers. Midji Yawa said 13 people are confirmed dead and many more are wounded. Speaking to VOA by phone, the governor said Boko Haram has been targeting the area over the past month. He says the terrorist group has been using the long and porous border to steal food and money and transport them to Nigeria. Cameroon's government spokesman, Issa Chiruma Bakari, says the military has been deployed to seal that part of the border.
Cette proximité, cette frontière commune que nous avons avec le Nigeria.
He says the fact that the same people with the same language and descendants are found on both sides of the border makes it very difficult to identify strangers. He says the military will investigate whether the suicide bombers benefited from any local collaboration. Earlier this month, Cameroon deployed 1,000 additional soldiers in the north as part of a fresh regional offensive against Boko Haram. Since it started in 2009, the Boko Haram insurgency has killed over 20,000 people and displaced 2.7 million more. Moki Edwin Kinzaka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The UN mission in Liberia, UNMIL, turns over to Liberia responsibility for the nation's security tomorrow. Liberia is now preparing for an important presidential election next year. Some Liberians are concerned that the Liberian security is too partisan. Defense Minister Brown Samukai tells VOA's James Buddy, who is on assignment in Liberia, that the Liberian security forces are ready to take over. UNMIL was established in 2013 by the UN Security Council to protect the population from violence.
We are fully prepared, and we have been preparing for the past 6 years in the process. We've gone through a lot of training, a lot of capacity building. We have seized the opportunity with the challenges we have to make sure that our security elements are throughout the country. We have the police all over. The military is involved in civil-military operations. Just last week, we conducted activities along with the police and other elements. Definitely, we are. We are definitely prepared.
In terms of logistics, I mean, I've talked in the streets yesterday with people. They talk about how the military or your security forces lack logistics, underpaid soldiers. Do you believe you have funding to take care of these things?
I don't think you're going to have adequate logistics all the time, but you have what is available in order to utilize that. For the military, for an example, the U.S. government have just presented to us, while you are coming to the barracks, will be presenting to us about 22 brand new vehicles for the military to use. Our Chinese counterpart have donated transportation equipment to the Liberian military, to the Liberian police, the Bureau of Immigration, the Fire Service, and other agencies of government. So there are capacities that are being developed. Yes, there are still logistical challenges because, you know, we have to deploy to other countries. So other locations, yes, there are, but we'll deal with what we have.
I must say that talking to people and listening to the radio here, I was at several Atai shops yesterday. I'm sure you know. I heard divided opinion in terms of what Liberians think. Do they think that it's about time that the oil mill should leave, or do they think that oil mill should remain here? And I heard very varied opinions on that particular topic. For example, some people express concern. They think that oil mill should stay until after the election because they cited things like the security forces using excessive force.
Right.
In fact, somebody mentioned that they think you are being too political and they are concerned that what could happen if your security is in charge for the election.
No. I think the military, like I said, will not be playing any role unless it is on a more specific role of transportation, maybe logistical movement. But you notice that we have had two elections in the country that have been managed by the Liberian Security Forces. And we have by-elections that have also been managed by the Liberian Security Forces. So definitely, I think Liberia has come to an age that we have the capacity to be able to do that. What is more important is that you always have a divided opinion as to whether the UN should or the UN should not stay. But you know fully well the UN cannot stay in any mission forever. And we believe that we've been preparing for the past 6 years or more for this day to come.
So the issue of the underpaid soldiers, is that a fact or?
No, I don't know what I mean by underpaid. The soldiers are making $90 minimum salary. You know, they have different levels up to 2016. They now make over about 125% more than when making 1990. So the basic minimum, and today make at that basic minimum as high as salary of a deputy minister in government.
I've been reading the papers, what can you tell me about this story about Melvin Talbert? I think as I was reading it, it sounded as it General Sejusa of Uganda, just the same problem with General Sejusa and President Museveni.
No, what can you tell me? No. The analogy doesn't hold because the one in Kampala is political, and this is why he is strictly on the Uniform Code of Military Justice. When soldiers desert, soldiers go on AWOL, they are subject to NJPs, non-judicial punishment under the UCMJ. So that is what has happened in this particular case. I cannot speak of the case because I'm the reviewing authority, so that is how far I can go. The AFL has taken a decision, and the report is going to come to my desk, but that's what they have done. And that is in keeping with the Uniform Code of Military. However, if there was a court-martial decision that somebody wants to review it, it is their prerogative. But in this particular case, the first instance cannot be a magisterial court on a military matter. That is the point by which the case are going to court. But it's a very minor issue. Someone is in infraction of military rules and regulations. Someone has been penalized in keeping with the due process in the military. Simple as that.
That was James Patti talking.
The new U.S. envoy to Somalia, Stephen Schwartz, has been sworn into office. He is the first American ambassador to that nation in 25 years and represents a landmark in U.S.-Somali relations. U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken says Somalia has made significant strides in rebuilding its state in the past 3 years. Blinken says President Obama has chosen a diplomat of unmatched caliber and a public servant of unrivaled heart, said Blinken. The U.S. Embassy in Mogadishu closed in 1991 after Somalia's military regime was overthrown and violence erupted between warring clan militias.
In other news, witnesses and officials in central Somalia say more than 20 people have been killed in fighting between government soldiers and Islamist insurgents. Al-Shabaab fighters attacked the Somali National Army base in a village in the Gargudud region before dawn yesterday. Colonel Ahmed Mohammed tells VOA Somali Service that 18 militants, 5 government soldiers, and a civilian were killed during the fighting. Mohammed says they were attacked by hundreds of heavily armed fighters and 10 battle wagons mounted with machine guns. The government soldiers repelled the attack. Officials say more than 10 militants and 2 government soldiers were also injured in the attack.
At least 10 people are reported to have drowned yesterday when the rubber dinghy they were in sank while attempting to cross the Mediterranean Sea from Libya to reach Italy. Meanwhile, there is new startling information regarding the migrant ship that sank off the coast of Sicily last year with an estimated 800 people aboard. That event was deemed one of the worst known tragedies of the Mediterranean migrant crisis. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following both developments and spoke with me first about the latest migrant tragedy that occurred.
Shocking news today. At least 10 people died after an inflatable dinghy loaded with immigrants began to sink in the Mediterranean on Thursday. The Italian Coast Guard said that around 107 people had been rescued from this stricken vessel, but unfortunately they recovered the bodies of 10 women who were also on this boat. It's possible that the death toll could be even higher. These dinghies that are used by people smugglers often carry up to 140 people. So it's unclear, but at the moment they have recovered the bodies of 10 women. Incidentally, a total of 223 people have so far been saved in 2 operations in the waters between Sicily and Libya today. The latest rescues lift the number of those who have been saved to around 13,700 in the last week or so. So those numbers are still increasing. We're still seeing migrants coming, and I think they're taking advantage of the calm conditions to try and make that crossing, even though it's particularly dangerous, as we know.
These migrants are migrants from sub-Saharan Africa?
These have not been identified specifically. I haven't got any more information on that, unfortunately. All I know is that there were 10 women on that vessel.
In addition, I understand you have more information regarding the rising of the sunken ship from last year.
Yes, the vessel that sank off the coast of Sicily in April last year has been recovered, as we discussed on the program. The migrant ship that sank with several hundred people on board last April has been brought to the surface, and officials from the Italian Navy gave a press conference today. Now, they said instead of the estimated 700 bodies that had been thought to have been trapped inside that ship that sank, they believe there may be 250 to 300 bodies, and they are going to start the painstaking process of trying to recover those bodies, identify those bodies, and get in touch with loved ones. Italian forensic experts, incidentally, said today they have been contacted by family members from Mali and Senegal who believe that their loved ones were on this boat, and they're hoping to identify them. The Italian Prime Minister, Matteo Renzi, has promised that any bodies that are found on this boat will be given a proper burial with all the right sort of honour and respect that these people deserve.
Does the number of bodies that were found on the boat, does that signify that perhaps there weren't as many people on the boat as initially thought?
It seems to indicate that there wasn't as many as they previously thought. I think it's early stages, so I want to be a little bit circumspect about that, but they were certainly trying to play down the number when they had the press conference today.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome. Also, Navy Rear Admiral Pietro Covino told the AP they recovered about 300 bodies from the hull of the fishing boat. Combined with the 180 bodies already found, the final death toll could be around 500. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Hayes Wuhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Cameroon says it is deploying more troops to its far northern border with Nigeria after a suicide attack yesterday. Liberia's defense minister tells VOA the army is ready to take over defense of the country from a UN military mission. And the new U.S. envoy to Somalia, Stephen Schwartz, has been sworn into office. He's the first American ambassador to that nation in 25 years. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The next president to ask his country to change its constitution so he can keep power may be Joseph Kabila of the DRC. Mr. Kabila is scheduled to leave office in December, but the 45-year-old president may ask for a national referendum to do away with his term limits. David Arnold reports on Kabila's options and whether citizens of Congo will be able to choose their next president.
President Joseph Kabila's second term in office expires on December 19th. Mr. Kabila has choices. He can abide by the Constitution or try to change it. Central Africa scholar Jason Stearns explores this presidential dilemma and a possible public reaction.
I think that after the 19th of December, which is when he was scheduled to step down, according to the Constitution, it will become increasingly difficult for him to stay in power. I think that there's a constellation of forces that he has to face down that's going to be very difficult for him. And so I think there's going to be increasing protests across the country that will provoke clampdowns and repression from the government that will set the country on a very uncertain path. Kabila's faced not only with the opposition, he's faced with broad-scale unfavorability ratings amongst the population. Civil society, and particularly the Catholic Church, is very critical of him. The international community, just this week again, the European Union issued a statement saying the election should be held this year, as did the United Nations Security Council, and the U.S. government has imposed sanctions on the first member of the presidential circle, a police commander. And so I think it's increasingly looking difficult for Kabila while he is still in the driver's seat. I think the further we head down this road, the more tenuous his grip on power will become.
To make matters worse, Congo's elections officials say they need to clean up the voter registration rolls. They claim there just isn't enough time to have a national election before the president's term expires. Stern says the president is playing a role in that delay.
It's almost impossible for the elections to happen this year, which is when they were supposed to happen. There are deep political problems, notably the fact that President Joseph Kabila is term limited. According to the Constitution, he can't run for another term, will have to step down, and it's the unwillingness to do so that apparently has provoked him to delay the electoral process. So while several months ago it was very much up in the air whether he was going to run, now seems that the tides have shifted within the ruling party and that he or people around him at least have made up their minds that they are going to try for a constitutional revision.
It's not as though there isn't somebody else waiting to assume the presidency. Moise Katumbi is a former governor of Katanga province and a popular favorite among a divided opposition.
Katumbi, who's a newcomer in the opposition, much more affluent than anybody else, who has larger stature because of his wealth, because of his time as governor, but also because he was the head of the country's most successful soccer team, TP Mazembe. It's a crowded field, the opposition. They're very fragmented internally, and I think that's one of the problems in the electoral process.
This newcomer to the national political machine now has some legal problems that forced him to leave the country. Stern says that escape, even a temporary exile, makes running for president difficult to impossible. The charges made against Katumbi are worrisome for the country, says Stearns.
This should raise, I think, very serious worries about the future of the country. Moise Katumbi is very rich, former governor of Katanga province, which is the mining-rich province in the south of the Congo. Katumbi, who was once an ally of President Kabila, started saying, well, you know, we should have a discussion about the succession strategy. When that discussion did not go as he wanted, he joined the opposition, came to be perceived by Kabila because of his status, his wealth, as the main challenger. And recently there have been two separate legal cases against him launched. The first for recruiting mercenaries that didn't actually ever proceed to a verdict. He actually left the country, allegedly for, at least for medical reasons. The second case against him is over a real estate issue. He has now been sentenced in absentia in that case.
The sentence in that second trial was 36 months in prison. The government prosecutor in the first trial accused Katumbi of hiring foreign mercenaries.
Moise Katumbi has bodyguards in his personal security detail. Some of them are American. And the government's charge was a dozen or so Americans had been hired by Katumbi as mercenaries to destabilize the state. Again, Katumbi appeared in front of court on several occasions. The trial never concluded. And so before the trial was concluded, he actually went into medical exile due to a health condition. That was an outcome that was favorable to both parties. The government wanted him outside the country so he couldn't bother them and run for election. And Katumbi would have had to face certain jail time if he'd stayed in the country. And so he left in medical exile. He's been in medical exile for about a month now.
Whether the government has a good case for prosecution in either trial is not an issue right now. The three-year sentence made it clear to Katumbi that he needed to leave Congo and its politics for the time being.
I don't think the medical issue is actually a real issue. I think that's an issue that was just convenient for both parties. He breathed in some tear gas during the tumultuous events surrounding that court case. He was going to court every morning, surrounded by thousands of people. The police would clamp down on those protests with tear gas and throwing rocks at some points. And so a bunch of people were injured, including Katumbi allegedly himself. But from what I understand from people close to Katumbi, those injuries were never very serious. And that was a pretext used by the government to get him out of the country, a pretext that he actually took advantage of as well so that he wouldn't have to face jail time. He's on the move more or less constantly. He has properties. He's a very rich man. He has properties in London. He has properties in Brussels. He initially went to South Africa. And so he's between those countries.
Whether Katumbi returns to Congo to face justice or run for office depends on whether the president calls for a referendum to change the constitution so that Mr. Kabila can run for a third term. This is David Arnold, VOA Washington.
Egyptian investigators say a flight data recorder shows there was smoke aboard the Egyptair flight that crashed into the Mediterranean Sea May 19th, killing all 66 people on board. The recorder shows the smoke was in the lavatory and on some of the onboard electronics. Investigators say the recording stopped at an altitude of more than 11,000 meters. Investigators also say heat damage and soot was found on the front part of the wreckage of the Airbus A320. A second recovered black box was damaged and is being repaired in Paris.
Angola's Supreme Court yesterday ordered the conditional release of 16 political activists who have been in prison for the last 3 months. The group of young activists known as the Luanda Book Club were convicted last year of plotting to overthrow the government of President Eduardo Dos Santos. 15 of the activists were arrested and detained after attending a meeting in Luanda in June 2015. At the time of their arrest, the activists said that they were meeting to discuss a book about nonviolent resistance to repressive regimes, written by American philosopher Jean Sharp. Their sentences range from prison terms of 2 to 8.5 years. Their release came as a surprise to many political and human rights activists who have long criticized the Angolan government for its heavy-handed approach to civil disobedience and freedom of expression.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.